Wilma walked with an old aluminum cane, a clear plastic handle grip like a tricycle's, four-pronged base for stability. She was old and had always been too heavy. To pull herself through our front door, left foot up, then the cane, then the right foot, was a major undertaking. Her visits sometimes lingered a half hour or so beyond long enough, because once she had to think about pulling herself up from the kitchen chair that she threatened, leaving seemed too much like work. So she sat there as if just getting in through the door merited an audience. Often enough, she'd sit at her own kitchen table playing solitaire and smoking. No one was supposed to know about the Winstons. Her kitchen window, hung with half Dutch, half curtains, was no more than 20 feet from the window at the top of the stairs. At night, when I came down from putting kids to bed, I'd see her dealing out another hand. One Saturday, she lumbered through our front door and came to rest on a kitchen chair, one hand slumped over that cane's handle grip. I don't remember how she started talking, but a decade of solitaire sometimes creates a hair trigger. I wanted her to know that I was babysitting. That's what started her story, babysitting. Wilma said she was always afraid of kids and cars, for 50 years anyway, ever since the day she was babysitting little Nellie. You know Mrs. Swanson, she used to be in your neighborhood. Ever since little Nellie jerked her hand away from mine and tore into the street in front of the IGA and Evelyn Brasser hit her with that old Chevy, little Nellie just 3 1/2 and Evelyn just coming from high school, bang, right downtown. Already a half century old, Wilma's story was new to me, so I sat down. She said Marv Gustafson picked up little Nellie right off the cement and carried her to Doc Mander's house. That's the one that Fred and Alice live in now, just north of the new bank. But the doctor was gone out to a farm where there was no phone. So some man drove out to get him right away, and when he came back, he checked that little girl for broken bones and such and said it looked like she was going to be okay. But watch her close, he said to me, and I was just 17. What did I know? Little Nellie's mother, that's Alma. She was in the hospital for gallbladder surgery, and that's no picnic either. So later that evening, little Nellie starts to vomit, and my mother says vomiting is nothing at all, she told me, Ma did. Well, Doc Mander stopped in later, right before bed, and when I told him what Nellie did, he said, well, wrap her up in a blanket. She's going to this minute to the hospital. My lands, I was 17, and already I felt like all of it was my fault. Little thing just jerked her hand out of mine and ran straight into the street. What could I do? And Evelyn Brasser, the girl that hit her, she felt awful, and it wasn't her fault either. So 3 days, we waited to see if little Nellie would live or die. And the doctor said that she had a tiny fracture right over her nose, and if it was broken, she would likely die. But if it was only a crack, she'd get over it. And you know how fast things heal when you're young. And all the time, Nellie's mother is recovering from gallbladder surgery. And Doc Mander said Alma shouldn't know about her only child hanging there between life and death, so Nellie's father would visit his daughter for a while, and then his wife, being sure to pull his coat on before he came to his wife's door to make it look as if he'd just come in from the cold. And can you imagine what it was for me, you know, the babysitter? 3 long days waiting for death, and I was 17 years old. Wilma's eyes glistened in the searing memory of guilt a half century before, and she turned away from me. But I put my elbows up on the table, and I knew little Nellie lived. I knew 30 years later I grew up with little Nellie's oldest son, and her story I thought was over. Well, 25 years later, she said, to the month, my son Eddie had that accident on a motorcycle, she said. Images came back to me because that was a story I remembered. 3 weeks, Wilma's boy, just 17, hit by a drunk driver, was suspended between life and death just like little Nellie. And there was a girl killed on Eddie's motorcycle, the only daughter of Evelyn Brasser. That's what Wilma said. The same Evelyn Brasser that hit little Nelly right there in front of IGA 24 years before. I didn't go to the funeral, Wimma told me, because it was life and death for my son Eddie. So I never talked to Evelyn Brasser after that awful Sunday afternoon. And 5 years later, after my husband died, I took a job at the shoe factory, Wilma said. And that first day, Evelyn, she'd worked there for years, you know, Evelyn sees me walking up the sidewalk and marches to the boss. "I won't have it," she says. He told her he couldn't refuse me work for her reason. No way. So right then and there, Evelyn quit rather than work with me. She quit right there on my first morning because of me. My lands, I felt terrible. But what could I do? My kids had to eat. Should I quit because Evelyn Brasser won't talk to me? I couldn't. But she comes back to work a week later, maybe. I don't know why. And the supervisor puts us together. "You show Wilma how to sew these things," he says to Evelyn. "You know, there's a trick to doing it right. He made her talk to me. She had to." And there we sat at that sewing machine. And Evelyn, I says, "You can't hold this against me anymore. It wasn't me that did it. It wasn't even my own son. It was that drunk driver. He was the one responsible. You can't hold it against me anymore," I said. "But my daughter is gone," she says, "and you still have your Eddie." "Evelyn," I says, "I don't know why Eddie lived. I don't know why your daughter died. But I know God has a plan of these things," I says, and you can't hold it against me anymore. You can't." And that was what it took. Just then we started talking. That was it. All of that story, I still remember so well. And then old Wilma pulled herself up from that odd-looking cane and opened the front door before taking a step out. The story and her visit was over. So I said, "You stop in again, Wilma," I told her. I meant it. I really did. "People without hope don't write novels," Flannery O'Connor once said. But I wonder if that assertion doesn't hold for more of us. People without hope don't tell stories. Wilma's gone, but her story lives in me, and tonight I've given it to you by telling it. We tell stories to remember and not to forget. And we tell stories to affirm our lives, to remind us that being human has meaning. I hope you like my story. It's really Wilma's, but it's mine. And like all good stories, now, it really belongs to all of us. Thank you.
Jim Scopp spent 36 years teaching English at Dort College. He is the author of 24 books and several short stories. He writes almost daily at siouxlander.blogspot.com. Jim read his story at Ode's live storytelling event in June. Tune in every Wednesday at 7:50 a.m. and 4:50 p.m. to hear more from Ode. Next week, Frances Chavez tells us about the time she dropped everything to go help Syrian refugees fleeing to the islands of Greece.
As the day wore on, I tried not to think about how tired I was or how hungry or any of these other things, because all I wanted to do at the time was help these men and women who were seeking asylum, just like my father sought asylum all those years ago for his family.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage to promote positive impact through empathy. The next event is Friday, September 23 at Coffee Connection in South Sioux City. The theme is Just Work. To learn more, find Ode on Facebook. You can also listen to past stories we have broadcast at kwit.org. The music you're hearing was played live by Melanie Mergen at Ode's last event. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Allie Carson.
I let the walls fall, tumbling one after another, crumbling as they melt. And it's strange the way the months form from the days. They all start to slip away the moment you don't pay attention or forget affection. Find yourself alone in what was once your home. You could never say the right words to me. You could paint the perfect picture I'd only half believe. We gotta take time to unwind, to let our guard down, show who you are now. We got our scars on dissonant hearts, but soon we'll learn to sing in tune. And after all that we've been through, it's nice to meet you.